So, are you tired of them yet? Political ads, I mean. For those of us who still watch television. Whatever your party or persuasion, I think most people dread this time of the year during the election cycle. And by the way, fewer and fewer people watch television each year. It's us older folks. But studies are reporting now that 75% of political ads are attack ads or some kind of negative spin on their opponent. Very few ideas are really shared. Most people are pretty happy when the Wednesday morning after an election arrives, except perhaps the losing candidates. Why do we tolerate it? Why do we put up with it? I think we do because we understand underneath all of the rhetoric that leadership does matter. And we still believe, although we can be pretty cynical, that choosing our own leaders for government is important and that it makes a difference. It was Alexis de Tocqueville who said that in democracy, we get the kind of leaders we deserve. So I think we're still trying to deserve as good as we can. Well, you know, Moses was a leader who was in many ways better than the people deserved. But he was no less than was needed. He was reluctant, yet he could be determined, brooding, quick-tempered, but sometimes patient and deeply loyal. He was a contradiction from many perspectives. Moses was human. And as the scriptures tell us, unmatched by any prophet. Israel's story, which is also our story, ascribes to Moses a privileged place of memory. We're still fascinated by him and by the amazing facts and feats of the Exodus. Every year, and you may know this, since 1973, the Ten Commandments film has been shown on ABC television. It still is, in that Easter, Passover time of the year. Now, just so you know, it's not very true to the biblical story. It's pretty good for 1950s, kind of, you know, there's a lot of that in there. But it's had tremendous staying power. Adjusted for inflation, it's in the seventh place of all films for earnings. Its revenues are equivalent to $2 billion. And in just a few weeks, a new epic film will be released by Ridley Scott called Exodus, Gods and Kings, starring Christian Bale as Moses, so we know Amanda's going to like it already. But Christian Bale has already gone on record of saying that Moses was a crazy man, an abuser, all these kinds of things of this character that he played. And I think, you know, so far the media have missed some important qualities of this man. His vulnerability, his responsive heart, his relationship with the God who called him and led him to free God's people from oppression. And in today's Old Testament passage, we see some of this as he comes to the end of his life as Israel's deliverer. So we're looking at the passage today from Deuteronomy. I'm not going to review Moses' story, but it's a good read. It is, and you can find it in the pages of Exodus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. Basically, he grows up in a place where he doesn't belong. He enters exile to escape punishment for murder. He is called by a God he doesn't know, to take on a job he doesn't want, to free a people that don't really claim him, to wander in a desert not of his own making, to lead them to a land he cannot enter. Now, of course, there are many great and positive aspects to the narrative, but we must always keep in mind that Moses took on a task that was especially difficult, was painful and costly for him, and to which he brought his own human frailty. And now today, as we see in the passage, he's come to the end of his journey. God showed him. He took him to the mountain and showed him all the promised land. It's kind of a panorama, north, south, east, and west. It looked all different directions. And by looking into that land, Moses was looking into the past and the future. The past promised to Abraham and Israel's future place of possession. I mean, think about what it must have been like for someone like Moses, who had never known what home really was. I mean, remember, he spent most of his life in exile, a foreigner of some kind or another. And now he is glimpsing with his own eyes what he had only seen in dreams. Now, he couldn't enter because of his disobedience in an episode of providing water from the rock. But God let him see the fruit of his sojourn. And then Moses dies, and we're told that God himself buries Moses in secret. This prophet that had spoken with God face to face. There's real intimacy here. We see God's tenderness. We're reminded of Moses' special relationship with God. And at the end of his life, God takes Moses to himself in secret. I mean, if we think about it, that's the way Moses' life began, isn't it? He's secretly kept alive, placed tenderly in the water by his mother because all the Hebrew boy children were to be allowed to die. But in order to save his life, she places him in a basket into the River Nile, and Moses is found by the one person who could appeal for his safety, the Pharaoh's daughter. You see, God was at his beginning, and God was at his end. And over the journey of his life, Moses came to know the God who had saved him and that he was spared for a purpose. Moses came to love God and know him intimately. Exodus 33 tells us that when Moses entered the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Lord would speak to him face to face as a man speaks to a friend. This is repeated at the end of Deuteronomy. Moses knew God. He served him powerfully, not perfectly. And the Lord granted Moses wisdom and insight in a very personal way. When Jesus is asked by the teachers and the lawyers, which is the greatest commandment, he sums up the law by saying, love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And we see this in the life of Moses, who gives his whole self to God in devotion and commitment and selfless service. But that's not all that Jesus said about the law, is it? He says, and the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. So I'm kind of relating Moses to Jesus' summary of the law. We know Moses loved and obeyed God, but do we understand how he loved the people of God? They weren't easy to love. I mean, if you know the story. And think about it, he was different than they were. He had been raised in affluence and power. When he shows up in the desert, they said, oh, some Egyptian is here. That's how he came across. He had a bearing. He was from some other place. You don't think that some Hebrew mothers whose sons had died didn't look at their deliverer who had come on the scene and asked him, how old are you? Why are you alive? Who was he? Was he an Egyptian? Was he a Midianite? Was he a true Hebrew? You see, we know these people were rebellious and stubborn, murmuring, complaining, betraying. And leading them almost killed him. If there was a job someone should have been reluctant to take, it was this one. But Moses came to love the people. In spite of themselves, he gave everything he had for them. Time and again, he stood between them and destruction, pleading with God to keep his covenant and show mercy. In Exodus 32, at the episode of the golden calf. After that, God's really had it. And he says, I'm just going to destroy them all, and you and I, Moses, will start over, the two of us. And Moses pleads with God not to do that. See, Moses loved these tough folks. And at his death, the whole nation of Israel wept and mourned for a month. This man who had become their father. He had led them from the paucity of Egypt to the abundance of God's provision, as Walter Brueggemann puts it, and they would never forget it. So it strikes me that as Jesus is summarizing the law, summarizing the law and the prophets, he's actually summarizing the life of the lawgiver, Moses, who loved God and his people with the full measure that he had to give. And both God and the people mourn when Moses dies. A couple of insights I want to underline. First one is that God is faithful. This is a story about God's faithfulness. God takes up Moses at the end. God is with Moses at the beginning. In fact, we meet Moses, Samuel, and Jesus as children, don't we, in the biblical narrative. It's a reminder that God is there before we know. God is also there as Israel transitions to new leadership. He calls, he provides, he protects, he guides, he loves. In the psalm, we hear this line, "You have been our refuge from one generation to another." God is faithful with us, too. He is in our beginnings and our endings. God is in our transitions. Are we learning to trust his presence in those places particularly? Are there endings that we need to trust God to care for? Losses and griefs that are beyond our ability to touch. Do we trust what God is up to in our lives? Are there beginnings or transitions in our lives that we're just not sure about? These are risky places, but they're also doorways of new life and fresh experience where God does new work in us and through us. Can we trust God's skill as author in writing our lives? Certainly Moses did. So God is faithful. And then secondly, are we living life like Moses? Do we love God and love our neighbor? Do we love God and the people of God? You know, we might not be called to liberate some great people or do some great, amazing thing, but we're invited to journey with God and with one another. Is our devotion to God growing? Are we seeking to move deeper in? Are we praying that we would love God with all of our being, that our hearts would be soft and vulnerable? Are we loving others? Are we living selflessly, seeking to serve others in Jesus' name? And do we understand how strange that sounds to people who are not disciples of Jesus, to live for others, but how central it is for our own health and vitality? In the reading today to Thessalonians, Paul is writing, and he said, you know, we shared with you not only the gospel, but we shared our lives with you because we loved you so much. Just a few weeks ago, Truett Cathy died. Truett Cathy was the founder of Chick-fil-A restaurants, which, by the way, you can't go to have lunch there today because they're closed on Sundays. Started in a simple little restaurant, a family-owned restaurant in Georgia, and it just expanded around the world. But he was a committed follower of Jesus Christ, and he invested in people, in educational programs, in camps for young people, in foster homes, in scholarships. He printed up a card that he would give to young people when he met them. And I think one or two of our kids met him at one point along the way, and he gave this card. and had a very simple statement printed on the card. It said, "I am third. I am third. God, others, then me." Shakespeare says it in his play, Henry VIII, on how to be just and noble. Love thyself last. Do we love others? Do we love the people of God? Emily sent something to me this week. It was a meditation from Henri Nouwen, and I thought it fit here really well because it's about loving the church, loving the people of God as Moses loved God's people. Nouwen writes this. He says, "Loving the church often seems close to impossible. Still, we must keep reminding ourselves that all people in the church belong to that long line of witnesses moving through this valley of tears, singing songs of praise and thanksgiving, listening to the voice of their Lord, and eating together from the bread that keeps multiplying as it is shared." When we remember that, we may be able to say, "I love the church, and I'm glad I belong to it." Loving the church is our sacred duty. Without a love for the church, we cannot live in it in joy and peace. And without a true love for the church, we cannot call people to it. It's sort of in style to give up on the church, to give up on the people of God, and to seek to do other things. But we are to love the Lord with all that we have, and we're to love others like ourselves. Today, in just a few moments, we'll do something particularly relevant to the faithfulness of God and loving God and each other and loving the church. We'll gather here at the waters of baptism. And whenever I come to the font, I think about Moses, actually, quite a bit. He's not the only character who shows up. But his story is very strong over this because he was saved from the water. He delivered his people through the water by God's power. And when he came to the River Jordan, unable to go on, God took him up to himself. His life was bounded by water, as is ours in the Lord's family. So as we come to the waters today, we give thanks that God is with us through all of our lives, in the beginning of our lives as we baptize these children, through our lives, at the end of our lives, and that he is faithful. Amen.